Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Monday, the 8th of June. Very nice to have you with us. It's our post-fund drive edition of the roundtable, which means all of our voices sound a little bit frayed, but we're very happy to be here in a normal setting.
And we'll be giving the phone number.
we will.
Sporadically.
We'll try not to, but we probably will end up doing that.
I'll hit the bell.
It's so funny because people who are listening may not know that we really do that. As I was teaching all of these years, Joe, I know, has done the same thing. In the middle of a class, I'll say, this happened, and then you say 1-800-323-9262. Yeah. And the kids look at you as if you're absolutely crazy.
Well, at least they were listening.
What you feel.
It's right. A nervous tick.
Yeah, absolutely, because there's a silence. Yeah, I did it during church one time when I was doing a reading.
Nice.
You really did?
Yeah. Read a little Torah,
1-800. Yeah, right.
Just as long as you get the trope right, no one's going to say anything.
Reading from the Book of Numbers brought to you by. what are you going to do? Congratulations to all involved. It was a beautiful fun drive. It was very nice. We were just talking beforehand that everything went very nicely. It was sweet and beautiful and short, and everything was felt good.
No one got too cranky?
No.
Alan. I mean, well.
Let me
just say that the two themes that I really thought came out of it were sharing and generosity.
Absolutely.
I mean, it was a real eye-opener for me that people would rather give a kid a knapsack with school supplies so that they were not the only one in the class, rather than get, a hat or whatever. Of course, at the end, we began to give out everything. Everything must go.
Right. Well, you have all that stuff. You have to move the merchandise. But it was very nice, and we just want to thank everyone for that. And it was lovely, and it's great to be back. So here we are. We heard Ronnie Gilbert coming in, singer Ronnie Gilbert, a member of the 50s folk group The Weavers, who passed away on Saturday in California at the age of 88. And very sad news, but certainly we pass that on this morning. Anything you would like to...
I would. When you said that, you're right. No question that it was the 50s group. However, for many of us, it was an all-time group. I mean, it was seminal in terms of the establishment of folk music in America. Everything flowed from the Weavers. Everything, and a woman of tremendous courage. I mean, real courage. She, Huac and all the rest of those, people who were so... all the anti-communist crowd and the blacklisting and... The Weavers, and so all of these songs on Weavers on Tour, Weavers at Carnegie Hall, those records, if you look at anybody who sings anything folk, you'll find all of those songs one way or the other. She was a marvelous woman,
Arlo Guthrie was quoted over the weekend and mourned the death of, quote, a great and talented gal, noting that only her passing leaves only one living member of the Weavers, Fred Hellerman.
And I interviewed him for 1 hour and for a pledge of $100.
1-800-323.
Right. He had to pay $100 to get interviewed? Is that it?
He was terrific. I mean, he's the last guy at Toshi Seeger's funeral thing, which WMC helped to put on. He was sitting in the front row, Fred Hellerman, and he had, I believe, a oxygen thing, on. And there he was. So there they were, the four Weavers, only one of them left now, Fred Hellerman.
So we note that. The other sad thing that happened while we were gone and the funeral was over the weekend was the passing of Beau Biden, son of Joe Biden. The Vice President of the United States, a man who was had political aspirations of his own, was a veteran, and a very sad story. Succumbed to brain cancer and a fight that he had been waging for quite a while. To see the Vice President break down during the week, during the viewing, and then later and during the funeral, the President's eulogy, I thought, was gorgeous, absolutely beautiful, and showed the...
Yep.
And there's two things I want to mention. I mean, one was just the overall tragedy of it, but also, I don't remember, and you can tell me maybe I'm being naive and maybe it's, different, but I don't remember in our recent
or, you know, when I say recent, in our sort of, you know, last 100-year history of there being a closer president and vice president than these two men. They seem to be extremely, they seem to actually like each other and have a real respect for one another.
They have a bond. There's
you
no
know,
choice
and,
about
and,
it.
And no, you know, I think, and, you know, people can occasionally make fun of President, Vice President Biden and his
gaffes.
You know, misspeaking and his gaffes. And I think...
I never think of that bad, by the way.
No, I don't think so either.
And the first among us, you know.
And the president has been very... And the president seems to have been, you know, with good humor about it, and also is, you know, give him a little shot every once in a while, and he gives a shot back, and it just seems like a very healthy, very good relationship, and we certainly saw that at the funeral on Sunday, which again I thought the eulogy was beautiful.
It was.
Yeah, you know, no parent should have to bury their child. It's just that simple. No,
by the way, Libby, you are so right. I'm sitting here thinking that.
You know, we're supposed to bury our parents, and we're supposed to become our parents and take care of them in their old age. And, you know, this is just, it's a tragedy. And
a tragedy piled on many other tragedies
that this poor guy has had.
Joe Biden's political career, the bookends are tragedy. And what happens in between is a triumph of spirit.
Although there are some who are still hoping that he's the presidential candidate.
Yeah, I don't think so. But that's,
I agree with you.
Yeah. But I think, and honestly, I think this might just be what, you know, puts an end to that.
On the contrary, I've seen letters to the paper and posted letters that saying, this is the man we want, a man of great sensitivity and stuff.
Absolutely true. Yeah. You know, somebody who's willing to cry in public. The last time a Democrat cried in public was... Ed Muskie, and we all know what happened to his campaign. So, I mean, but this is a man of
who cried?
True,
who cried?
Ed Muskie in Maine.
In the snow.
Right, in the snow. This is a man of true commitment and love for his family, and that's what we need to remember. And so was Beau Biden. I mean, he was a good family man. He was a good husband, good father, and he was a man who stood up for his principles.
Yep.
It was all just a very, very sad story, and so we talk about those two passings as we begin our program this morning. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and we'll follow up. We're going to, we have some good news to report. We'll do that in just a moment when we come back. We'll also talk about the big story, the elephant in the room, if you will, which is the fact that there are two escaped murderers from a New York State prison.
What a story.
Oh, I thought you meant Dennis Hastert. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. No.
Or Carl Hastie, a huge article
in
the Times this morning, basically suggesting he's doing some things that aren't right.
Right.
Okay, so we have a lot to talk about, as you can tell. We haven't been together for over a week, so we have a lot to talk about.
We have to cram it all
in. That's right. We have to catch up, so we'll take a break. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Saratoga Bridges, Ballston Spa, New York, a community resource for people with disabilities and their families. Supported employment, day services, and more. SaratogaBridges.org. Taft Farms, Great Barrington, 200-acre family farm harvesting asparagus, rhubarb, and seasonal vegetables, and offering homegrown flowers, bedding plants, and heirloom vegetable plants for your home garden. Open 7 days, taftfarms.com. The Sweater Venture, East Greenbush, New York, working globally, offered locally, 35 years of fair trade relations expressed in clothing, knitting, art, and artesania. Sweaterventure.com. And from Pioneer Post and Beam, a non-kit post and beam builder in Belchertown, Massachusetts, designing and erecting customized barns, artist studios, garages, and additions. PioneerPostandBeam.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel for this Monday, the 8th of June. Very nice to have you with us. So not only do we end the fund drive on Saturday, as if that was not enough,
no.
No, the Associated Press and the New York State Associated Press met in the city of Saratoga Springs on Saturday and doled out awards for excellence in broadcasting. And we were nominated for eight. Is that correct?
Nine,
and we won three.
Well, no. We got honorable mentions and best of the class for many of them. I think nine.
Well, yes,
including yours, Joe. Which congratulations, Joan Rivers in memoriam.
Yeah.
You and Sarah LaDuke won for that one, and the staff did a terrific series. WAMC's student loan series, and Jim Lavulis won the best. The top award for North Adams Regional Hospital closes.
Yeah, first place.
Yeah, first place. And Dave Lucas on the oil trains threatening Albany, depending on who you ask. I had at least two letters saying, how come WAMC never did anything on the oil train? Not more than one a day, but here's our Dave Lucas.
That's when your little vessel right here in your brain.
Yeah, you want to kill. Right, yeah. Okay. And then a first place award for Lucas Willard, our wonderful Lucas Willard, preserving the story of the American jukebox.
Which is a great
piece.
Great
doesn't
piece.
Get any better
great,
than
great
that.
Great stuff.
And Ian Pickus, say it best, first place. Ian won for Say It Ain't So, Jeter. Now, you know, Ian Pickus loves Jeter. And big thing about that.
We should replay that because that was a phenomenal
I believe
piece.
Everything is available online if you want to go back and listen to the award winners.
And the jukebox piece, too. Yeah. Both really timeless.
Very good.
So nice haul at the AP, New York AP.
Sure.
Those are always very fun occasions, and we thank them, and congratulations to all of the winners. All right. We have a few moments, so let us talk. We'll start to talk, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll come back, because I'm sure we won't get it all in before we're done here. But so the story that is making news all over the country is the escape of two inmates. This is in Dannemora. The state police and other law enforcement agencies were continuing on this morning to hunt for two fugitive murderers in the wilderness and rural communities of northern New York a day after the two men, both Sunday and Monday, escaped from the maximum security prison on Saturday. In a news conference Sunday afternoon, officials said investigators were sifting through more than 150 leads. Governor Andrew Cuomo announced that the state was offering a $100,000 reward for information leading to the capture of the inmates or $50,000 for tips leading to each one. This is a crisis situation for the state, the governor said. These are dangerous men. They are capable of committing grave crimes once again. So here's the story, and, you know, how many times have we seen this on television, in the movies, and it happened. So duping guards with dummies fashioned out of sweatshirts and using power tools to drill out of their cells.
Power tools? Where do they get power tools from?
I don't get why didn't anybody hear the power tools?
Well, my understanding on the power tools is that they were in either battery powered, so that they don't. It's not like having either an electric or a.
Yeah, but they were going through steel. That would make
noise. I know. I agree with you. That was just one
theory
that came out. Also, my understanding was is that they that. As of at least the initial report, was that all of the power tools that they were using as part of their job
were leftovers.
That they were accounted for. So these were extras and how they got those.
Or may have been, we read, leftover from crews which are doing construction there.
Right. So,
but how would they know that until they got up into the ceiling?
Well, because you assume that this has been in the works for a pretty long time as a fairly elaborate escape route. I don't mean any disrespect of this, but I do have to say, watching the governor sort of go through the cell and retrace the steps and coming out of the manhole cover was kind of amusing to watch. I thought. So that is
one other thing. This is not the Shawshank Redemption.
No, it's not.
These guys are heinous murderers.
Yes.
You know, the guy in his Shawshank, that way he was innocent.
Right.
So this is a whole different story.
It certainly is, and it brings up a lot of issues, of course. Not the least of which is the safety, and this is a crisis situation for the state, according to the governor. So we can talk about that. And then also just the aging of our correctional facilities, not only in this state, but throughout the country.
Is this the first one, by the way, that ever got out of Clinton?
Out of the maximum security portion of
Clinton.
Since 1865 or something?
So. Yeah. And, of course, it's going to raise, this is not an Allen editorial, but it's going to raise the death penalty yet again. Can you imagine if these guys kill somebody else? What do they have to lose? They've killed already. They're not going to be executed. Including one who killed a deputy. And the family's there. So can you imagine what somebody's going to write and say? Well, you know, if they were dead, they wouldn't have done this again, especially if they killed somebody else.
So the other question here, of course, the governor says the first order of business is to get the killers back. Yes.
Check.
Both of Vermont, you do have Lake Champlain in the way, but you have right on the Vermont border and, of course, the Canadian border.
Yeah.
So the question
25 miles from Canada.
I'd look at the Mexican border myself if I were you.
Well, you're not whistling Dixie there.
No, I know.
There's something to be said for that.
I don't think they're in New York anymore.
Yeah.
But don't we always say this and they always end up being like
eight miles away
from where they're
supposed to be? We don't know when they actually escaped.
Is that right?
An 8-hour window or 10-hour window?
I mean,
they left a note.
I read somewhere that they've detained someone who worked in the cafeteria who might have been sweet
or something
like that. And who knows? I mean, it seemed to be incredibly well planned. There might have even been a car waiting for them. Who knows? They could be anywhere.
Or imagine yourself in one of those houses, and they're in there with them, and they got a knife at somebody's throat. Right.
Well, no, that is really very, very scary. We're going to pick up this conversation. We'll welcome your comments as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. If I didn't give that out earlier, I don't even think I actually introduced the panel, but I think you know everybody.
1-800-323-9262.
We'll get back to business. I'll reintroduce when we come back. I'll reestablish, as we say, and then we'll get back to business. You're listening to the Roundtable panel on WAMC, roundtable at WAMC.org.
My Lord, what a morning. My Lord, what a morning. My Lord, what a morning. When the stars begin to fall, oh sinner, what will you do? Oh sinner,
good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable, playing Ronnie Gilbert and the Weavers this morning. Her passing was announced on Saturday. She died at the age of 88 in California. And we've discussed it this morning, but continue to play Ronnie Gilbert this morning. Just a programming note, President Obama is expected to hold a news conference at 10 o'clock this morning from the G7 summit in Germany. He is expected to take questions on a variety of topics raised at the G7, including ISIS, Russia, climate change, and trade. And we will carry that press conference as soon as it becomes available. As you may or may not know, when they say 10 o'clock, that's very loose. could be 10, could be noon. We don't really know.
So but very rarely before the appointed time.
Yes, very
and
rarely
they're
before
on a different
the appointed time.
Zone, as that's
right.
Anyway.
So we pass that on to you, and we just so you know, we will be covering that live beginning at 10 o'clock or so, whenever that comes to be. That's the programming note. Let's go on to some letters, which we haven't had in over a week, so we know you have a lot on your mind. We'll get to those, and then we'll continue our conversation, which I think most of these are on the prison escape, and we'll probably talk a little bit more about that as well.
Joe, some of these letters are funny, parenthesis, or not.
Right.
Steve writes, the answer to where the escapees got the power tools is simple, Home Depot.
Ba-dum-bum.
Okay. If there weren't heinous murderers, it would be even funnier.
Right.
Okay. Thomas says, so glad to hear all your voices this morning. I've been listening to WMC since I moved back to the area 2 years ago, but finally decided to throw in more than my 2 cents during the fund drive. I immediately started asking, how much money have we raised? Instead, is this thing over yet? Is this thing over yet? It's a great feeling to be giving to WMC as well as taking it from it, as I've heard Alan say so often. Raymond says, two murderers escaped from Clinton Correctional Facility. How much did Hillary know? Just kidding. Congratulations on another fun drive. And Joseph says, what better candidate for president than Joe Biden? That he wept at his son's funeral is humanized. I should say so. Let's see. Is there anything else? No, I don't think so. No.
All right. Does anybody have anything else to say on the, as far as the prison escape of what comes next in this? Obviously,
catch them.
First catch them, and then
you got to assume they have split up. If they have any sense, they're not going to stick together while they're running around.
Yeah. Good point.
So we'll move on to other issues then and find out what else is making news over these many, many days. We will talk about, Alan, do you want to start off with Carl Hastie?
Well, the news speaker is Carl Hastie. He took Sheldon Silver's
New York's Assembly.
New York, yes. Assembly. This is an endangered place to be. One would wonder why anybody wants to be Speaker of the New York State Assembly.
An endangered species.
Because you have a target on your back. And in some cases, that is a deserved target. So Carl Hastie, who his family has been beset with problems. His mother was convicted and that kind of thing. And now it turns out that he has been charging New York State, according to the New York Times this morning, for fixing his car, using his campaign funds to fix his car. Now, that wouldn't be so bad, except that they get mileage for using the car. And that mileage is supposed to cover everything, including the conditioning of the car, you know, the taking care of the car. So it looks like he's really been taking advantage.
How much money did they say?
Well, more than $30,000 over 9 years, because he had repairs every 10 weeks.
Yeah.
It's a BMW, after all, so he had to get that. But then there's also the...
In a garage in his neighborhood, don't you know?
Yes, and because of to cover repairs and other costs for trips to and from Albany. Also, there was a tab for quote-unquote food at Happy Valley, a Manhattan nightclub that does not sell food, but was popular for its throbbing dance floor and caged go-go dancers.
Yeah, that's a little...
I've never understood the word throbbing in that case.
It's
a pulsing music.
It's a pulsing, you know, the boom. You know.
House music.
Yeah.
I see, okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you don't know from house music because you can't play it on a banjo.
Well, it's the
Weavers.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's not the Weavers.
Right.
Yeah, the throbbing dance floor with music from Ronnie Gilbert, ladies and gentlemen. When it came time to file reports on how his campaign had spent its money, a total of nearly $1.1 million since he took office in 2001, he often did not detail where that money had gone. His filings contain no explanation at all for who ultimately received nearly $150,000 from the campaign. Mostly, he asserted, because the expense amounts were less than $50 and did not need to be itemized under state rules, according to an analysis of his financial disclosure records by the New York Times. Let me ask a very naive, stupid question.
Never.
Thanks for playing along. Which is, we knew the guy had problems from the very beginning, right? I mean, there were questions surrounding the guy.
Mm.
So you have Sheldon Silver indicted.
Yeah.
Arrested, indicted.
Right.
And then why pick this guy when he's got trouble? And now, as you look into it, just because you can almost see this one unfold, right? That you knew that they were going to...
On day one, I said so. I'm telling you, on day one, I said this is trouble. And
right.
And tell you why it is trouble, because he was picked by the other bosses. You see, there's a boss of the Bronx, there's a boss of Brooklyn, and there's a boss of Manhattan. He got the other bosses in it. So he gets elected to be the speaker on the boss vote.
But do you think they did it to set him up, or do you think that they did it because they thought he could get away with it?
No, they always think they can get away with it. That's the terrible thing about what's going on in Albany. You would think that these nincompoops would know that they really have to have genuine reform. There are other states that did it. They won't do it. They're just too happy with what they got. Until the last man standing or the last woman standing, they are going to continue on this stupid way of trying to get over on the public. It's awful.
So you're saying he's guilty?
Well, one is entitled to a fair trial. If one reads the New York Times this morning, it sure doesn't look good. And these are all his filings, by the way.
Right.
These are all the things he filed with that the Times just went and looked up the numbers.
The problem is that people don't take these filings seriously, especially incumbents who have been elected over and over and over again. You know, it's the people who are running the first time. We take that very seriously.
So when he took over, he pledged to restore trust in Albany by enacting ethics reform.
This is the way to do it, all right.
So, you know.
And they said, from now on, we'll do better. That's what the press officer says.
Right.
From now on, we'll do better.
So,
and when they pass a law, Libby just said something profound. When they pass a law, they make sure that the punishment is never great enough to mean you're not going to do it.
That's right.
Now, that's why you got Preet Bharara and the Federal Bureau of Investigation looking into it. Because if you did it just on the state stuff, nothing would ever happen.
The election law is written to protect the incumbents. It's just that simple.
So where does this go, Alan? I mean, how far do you think?
I think Preet's probably got it on his desk this morning and looking at it and saying, okay, you know, this can't pass. There are theft of honest services laws and things like that. I have a feeling, you know, once this cat is out of the bag, meow, it is unlikely that he stays, because one thing leads to another and another and another.
Can you imagine how many things are on Preet Bharara's desk at this point?
Yeah.
Guy works hard.
Yeah. I mean, there must be piles and piles and piles.
Yeah.
Well, the old adage is where there's smoke, there's fire, but yes. There just seems to be a lot of smoke.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the columnists has a story this morning, I don't remember who it was, saying, okay, I do, this is the POST, saying that, you know, that Cuomo hasn't been heard from, that he's worried about, you know, about Bharara and all the rest of it. So who knows?
Well, I mean, he's been heard from this weekend.
Over to the prison, going out through.
Right. He's doing what he has to do, right?
Canceled.
Well, that's what one does, right?
Right.
When
he didn't go
governor?
To the Belmont.
Didn't go to the Belmont. Service.
Well, you got to give him a little credit for that, don't
absolutely.
You?
I mean,
absolutely. Yeah. No, you do what the you do what you have to
he
do.
He did the
as,
right
as
thing,
governor, and you.
Right.
Well, he did
you
the
go
better
where the
thing.
Crisis is.
Yeah, he did the better thing.
Okay, so let's take a break. We'll be back. We'll talk about other stories. We have a couple things to discuss to wrap up. We always welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Unusual Wedding Rings and More in Crawford Square, North Street, downtown Pittsfield, featuring a variety of jewelry, specializing in repair, remodeling, and recycling, 413-236-9300. Kent Hicks Construction, West Chesterfield, Massachusetts, specializing in energy-efficient, net-zero passive house home building, deep energy retrofits, and historical restorations. Serving Western Massachusetts, KentHicksConstruction.com. Carrie Headhead Gallery, Hudson, New York, presenting Earth Sky Dream, an exhibit featuring Bruce Murphy, Linda Newman, Bowton, Laura Van Rosk, Chris Freeman, and Jane Bloodgood Abrams, now through July 12th. CarrieHeadadGallery.com. And from Albany Realty Group, a local woman-owned real estate company since 2003, educating and counseling sellers and buyers throughout the real estate transaction. AlbanyRealtyGroup.com.
It's a mighty long road that my poor hands have pulled. My poor road, heart of your dust born.
Welcome back to the roundtable for this Monday edition of the panel discussion post-fund drive. Very nice to be with you. Thank you very much. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. So while we are talking about politicians in legal troubles, we go to Dennis Hastert, the former Speaker of the House of Representatives. And so I believe this story did break prior to our going into fund drive. And but what we knew then was that there was that he was right the indictment, but there were no specifics on the charges of who he paid off and why. Well, now we know more about that, and there was there's been speculation for quite a while, and so this was ultimately hush money, known in the indictment as Individual A, to prevent the man from publicly saying that Dennis Hastert sexually abused him decades ago when Hastert was a high school teacher and a wrestling coach in Yorkville, Illinois.
Now, I must say, I haven't read it the whole thing carefully enough. However, one of the things that I saw was, by the way, there was smoke, there is fire. One of the things that I saw is that somebody had died of AIDS.
Her brother, yes.
Yes, and she... His,
she, the sister came forward.
And but that is not, I don't think, Individual A.
No, it's not, because Individual A is still alive getting money.
Yeah.
And what's
so
interesting here
more
is
than
that...
One.
Right, Individual A hasn't come forward yet. And what needs to be said here is that this isn't a gay man. This is a pedophile.
Sure.
And people just, because I think some folks will, of course, take a very broad brush here.
Sure.
But this is a pedophile, someone who went after young, vulnerable, and in the man who died. His case, this was the 70s. Being out was, you know, verboten. And clearly Hastert saw something in this kid and knew that he could exploit it. And it's really pretty disgusting. And then you look, you know, at his votes, they're just, he's just duplicitous and you know, more and more of this will come out. I mean, what was interesting is Hastert, you know, defended for a very long time Mark Foley, until it was indefensible. Mark Foley was the Florida congressman who was sending really disgusting texts to young interns, teenage interns.
So, but here was Hastert, who was a beloved figure.
Yes, he was.
He was a beloved figure. You know, I get it when...
It's like a teddy bear.
Yeah, I get it when... And by the way, there's a very famous rule in politics called the Hastert rule, which means that in order for any bill... I hate it, of course. Any bill to come to the floor, even if there are enough votes to pass it, you don't get it to the floor unless there's a majority of the majority who are willing to vote for it in the conference.
That's insane.
Yeah, not right.
That's not
that
democracy.
Ain't right. No.
That's demagoguery.
Does anyone know, as Alan said, what I've read on this, one of the questions I have, and maybe it's very easily explained, I don't know, but so this money was hush money. Did they come to him saying that they were going to out him and that was why they paid, or was it part of a settlement that was legal? I don't know that question.
I don't think it's... Nobody really knows those answers, because he's not saying anything.
Well,
his lawyer's not saying anything.
Right. I mean, the indictment comes from the fact that he misused the money
to pay off
the hush money.
And that was it.
But not as far as the, you know, was there extortion? Was there saying, you know, I'm going to, which may explain individual A of why that's, you know.
Nobody's being clear about that, because the extortion isn't the crime here. It's him lying to the FBI.
Don't lie to the FBI.
Right.
Always a bad idea.
Rule number one.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's really duplicitous.
We had a letter, Joe, just I wanted to mention it from Lois, who says, let's not forget that Gene Ritchie, very famous dulcimer player, passed this week also.
Okay.
All right. Our moment of silence.
Right.
Okay. Now let's go to, first of all, we have a Belmont, first time since 1978, a winner of the Triple Crown, It seemed as though in this age of as racing has changed, that there would not be a Triple Crown winner. We've had several almosts, 13, I believe, and none of those.
11.
11, I apologize. So here we go.
So I'd love to go to our sports analyst here, Ray Graff, and ask him this question. Right. I'll probably stump him.
All right.
But here's the question.
Right.
So we give all kinds of kudos to this horse. Was Pharaoh's?
American Pharaoh.
Yeah. And we give all kinds of credit to that horse for going. But what I wanted to know from Ray or from Ian Pickus or for anybody in the know is whether anybody timed the race. The reason I say that is, in other words, there may have been other races where the Triple Crown could have been decided and somebody lost because the race was faster than this one. Do you understand my question?
But you don't have to win a world record to win the race.
No, you have to win the race.
No, I got
but
that.
You're
I,
wondering
I, no,
if,
I understand
if,
that. I if, just want to know yes. how good this horse
oh, that's,
was.
Oh, that's separate. If you win all three parts of this, then it's special. No, it happened 37 years ago. So what's
it's not? You know, I understand what you're saying.
If you look at this horse, if you looked at this horse on paper and the racing record for this year as well as last, this horse would not jump out at you as past winners of the Triple Crown have.
I see
as being exceptional.
That was my point.
However, by winning this, you become an exceptional horse.
But I mean, let's put it this way. Because
it's almost impossible.
The Yankees have won 27 World Series.
Yes.
Probably in 19 of those, the field that they played against was not very good, or is not nearly as good as they were.
I see.
And that doesn't take away from the 27 World Series they won.
I see.
So.
Did you watch it, Alan?
What?
The race?
No, I don't watch that stuff.
Oh, it was really exciting. And
when was it? Was it on the day we were on the air?
It was Saturday at 6:15.
At 6:50.
An obscenely late time.
It was. But we watched, and the horse just glided down the track. And when he
passed the eighth pole
it was
well, it reminded you of Secretariat at that point. Because, you know, the jockey's looking back, and it's like, all right, I got this, you know? And here's a jockey, a Mexican jockey, who comes into this this country and has been in this position three times and finally won.
Third time's a charm.
And it's just a lovely story all the way around.
Yes,
Bob Baffert. Well, that part of the story is there's a little bit of controversy over the owner of the horse and sort of his
got a horse right here.
Checkered background.
Well, but
and there's controversy over racing in general.
Yeah. Absolutely,
I didn't watch it.
And
I
hitting
even,
the horse
doesn't even
ripping the horse.
Well, what happens to some of these horses afterwards, and whether or not they're treated well? And
well, this horse is going to get treated well.
Oh yes, because
well,
this horse will be
right. Yeah.
They say a lot of money.
Yeah, yes. $20 million.
That's where they'll really make
money.
Horse
is going to have a robust love life.
Well, except that there is not really somewhat of a controversy as to whether or not the horse can race again, because the stud fees are so high, you wouldn't want to risk his hurting himself.
Right, that's true. Although, also, that they can make more money if he comes through the Haskell in New Jersey, or the Jim Dandy or Travers, both
Travers.
All being thought of as possible races for this horse, and then of course beyond that, the Breeders' Cup. Which I believe is in Keeneland this year. So
I see.
We'll see. I know you do. So we'll see what happens. It's a fascinating story. You know, I have been, my family and I, you know, my father was a racing commissioner, my grandfather was a racing commissioner in Saratoga and Naira for a long time. And I grew up in sort of this thing of horse racing. I remember, I didn't see it, of course, but I remember, of course, hearing all about Secretariat and Affirmed.
Didn't see Secretariat?
Well, I saw it on television. I wasn't
there for
it.
You didn't see, really?
Yeah.
No. Oh, I watched it.
I watched it. I wasn't there.
Oh,
I wasn't there.
Oh, okay.
Family was there. I wasn't there. Okay. I was too young.
Okay.
But my point is that you sort of, you know, like, this, will this ever happen again? And then it happens, and it's like the most exciting thing in the world.
What's interesting is it happened three times in the 70s.
Yes.
And then there was a drought until now.
Yes.
By the way, a regular correspondent, Kenny G.
Yes.
Wrote in and said, on the Today Show this morning, they said that American Pharaoh had the fastest time ever in the Belmont for the final quarter mile. faster than Secretariat, who won the Belmont by 30 lengths.
Mm. Yeah, it's in the final quarter mile, though. It's not, or the overall time, but yeah, it's right. still right. it's still very good.
It was really something. And the woman who owns Secretariat was at the race yes. yesterday.
Wow.
And, you know, she's gotten up there in age, but she's still engaged in all of this. And, of course, the movie was great. I mean, for those of us sure. who like that, those kind of tearjerker movies yeah, like I do, knows? It was great. Yeah. It was great.
Do you ever see Mr. Ed?
Sure. Will
That's a show about horses.
Yeah. Anybody excited about the... And then we finally, we had the Tony Awards last night.
Oh, that was great.
Did you watch the Tony
yeah,
Awards?
Of course terrific.
You did. Yes.
Of course. I mean, I'm an inner... In, my inner gay man comes out when I watch the Tony Awards.
I watched. I
and
right
so
there,
did yours.
Right there with you.
It was I was terrific. Asleep.
Yes.
Kristen Chenoweth and Alan Cumming were just incredible.
The big winners of Fun Home,
which is
based on a story of a graphic novelist by the name of Alison Bechdel,
right.
Who wrote about her both. It's a fascinating story that both she and her father, she found at the same time, were gay. And her father eventually committed suicide as a result, and it was a very sad story. But they put this to an unlikely musical, but which was triumphant, just absolutely amazing.
And her, you know, as a lesbian coming out in the late 70s, she was an icon in a sense. She published these comics, Dykes to Watch Out For. And it really, I mean, I have all the books and, you know, they really were a chronicle of what it was to be a lesbian in the late 70s, early 80s, going to music festivals, non-monogamy, the whole schmear. And it was great. And it was great to see her last night win and get the recognition. What I found interesting was Christopher Isherwood in the blog on the Times was not a happy camper, and I thought that was very interesting.
Why not?
Huh?
Oh,
Charles Isherwood. Yeah, yeah. Yes, he was not Christopher. He was not a happy camper. I don't think he thinks that talking about lesbians is really a worthwhile thing, let alone singing about them.
And was he just upset because American in Paris didn't win?
Yes.
Yeah, well, because that wasn't a show, that was a dance. I'm sorry.
Well, I thought it was great, and I disagree with you. I think it was one of the best things I've ever
seen.
Well,
I love it, but
what's
it wasn't
more, I think it's one of the only things I've ever seen.
What, American in
well,
Paris?
That's, so that's
we're talking
the importance.
About the show on Broadway, not the movie.
No,
with Gene Kelly.
No,
I'd like to see
went.
It. I love the movie.
It was fabulous.
I love
it. Well, it's gorgeous. It was gorgeous, but it's just a lot of dancing.
Yeah.
Well, there's some people who think that's part of the American experience and very important.
Yeah, no, I know.
Oh, look at the time.
Yeah, okay.
oh, well.
I like a little more story in my musical. I thought the Fun Home certainly was very deserving. We are out of time. Well, thank you very much for everybody who checked in, and we will be back with more Roundtable after this. And again, we're going to be watching Around the President as soon as that becomes available. Thank you very much.